Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
You have to be able to walk into a practice right now in 2019, and you should be able to hear coaches saying please and thank you. Because that's the number one thing that's going to influence the awareness of your team. And the greater your awareness, the greater your power. This is not up for negotiation. There are no exceptions to the rule in any high school or college or professional team or grassroots situation in the history of the world.
Are you a member of the Rising Coaches Association? If not, we need you to visit risingcoaches.com right now and click on a full list of member benefits. It's $10 a month, a small investment to make in your career. What we are about is community, relationships, and development. We will make sure that we are providing value and filling those buckets for you on a daily basis. The Rising Coaches Association, servicing and connecting the coaching profession. Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by Scott Savor, author, keynote speaker, and performance coach. Scott has worked with some of the best athletes, executives, coaches, front office personnel in the world, and has done a ton of research on performance, habits of leaders, and he shares with us some of the lessons that he's learned over the years working with some of the greats, some of the habits that those greats have, and some formulas for success in the coaching profession or just in leadership in general. Such a good conversation, so much great content at a pretty fast pace. So get your pen out, get ready to take notes. We hope you enjoy this episode. Please subscribe to the podcast, spread the word, and write us a review. Let us know how we're doing, and visit us at our website and follow along with what we are doing at risingcoaches.com. Scott, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Outstanding, sir.
Thanks for being on the podcast. What's going on today? You are on the road, I believe.
Well, we got the Timberwolves versus the Warriors today, so catching up with some people in town, and very fortunate. I have a lot of variety with my job. Can't complain. Very fortunate.
Good, good. Well, I'm excited to talk to you. We've spoke a few times and have always been. The first thing that jumps out is your energy and your passion. And then the second thing is probably your intentionality and the intelligence and the amount of work that you've put into your craft. So I'm excited to share some of this with our audience today.
I'll tell you what, Adam, very fortunate. Yeah, very fortunate to be here. Looking forward to getting in the trenches with you a little bit.
Good deal. Well, let's start. Maybe you could tell us a little bit of your background, maybe starting in college, please. So you were an athlete. Maybe take us from there, how you transitioned from athlete and went on to your journey of becoming, you know, a learner and really studying the craft of coaching and performance coaching.
Sure. Well, just like any other listener out there right now who's been a coach, or everyone's got a story, right? So, but it's important. We got to do a better job of sharing our stories intentionally. Stop talking about the stupid weather and things that don't matter and drama and gossip, and start telling our stories to each other. It allows us to connect and all that fun stuff. So here's my quick Reader's Digest version. Thanks for listening. Very fortunate in the sports world. Grew up playing basketball, a little bit of football. Played for four different college coaches. Started as a JUCO kid for 2 years in Central Lakes College here in Minnesota. Played for two different coaches then, and then played for two other coaches at the Division II level at a place called Morehead State University, a D2 in Minnesota. And experienced every made-up conditioning drill, coaching philosophy, known to man or woman, in those 4 years. It was absolutely a roller coaster, but I feel like I can connect and relate to any coach or any player in the history of the world because I've experienced almost every platform you can imagine. Fast forward after that, after becoming an AP All-American, and that's not a good thing. An AP All-American that I share with people is an academic probation All-American. I was absolutely awful in academics, which changed my major from computer information systems to exercise science. And that's how I got into coaching and strength conditioning early on in my career by default. So it was kind of a weird thing. And then I got to intern with the Minnesota Vikings as an assistant strength coach, Randy Moss's first year. There's a billion stories inside of that. Didn't have a clue what I was doing, Adam, but was very fortunate to be around some really smart people in strength conditioning and performance. And then thanks for listening. Fast forward, was a strength coach in some very, very unique platforms for a long time, about 13 years, and then got on this really weird learning journey, reading thousands and thousands of books, completely out of control. I got myself around some very unique people who are really, really intelligent, changed my life. And they're like, you need to teach what you know. So,
okay, fast forward. So sorry to cut you off. I want to talk about that, the learning journey where you started going down this path of reading thousands of books and really researching human behavior, human performance, and I'm sure many other things. What triggered that for you? Was there an event in your life? Was there, you know, were you not happy in the work you were doing, or was it something completely different?
Yes, thank you. Great question. So it doesn't matter if it's me or anyone else, as long as we keep our radar up to the things that maybe a lot of people wouldn't pay attention to. So I'm at that time, 2003, I'm the head strength coach at University of Detroit, living my dream job, working with the Fab Five players, playing with them on the court, getting paid lots of money, all that fun stuff. I go down to Florida and spend a week with a mentor of mine. This gentleman was literally 2.5 times my age. Didn't really know much, but he's like, hey, anytime you want to come down and chop it up, let me know. And he introduced me, Adam, to a lot of very unique people who live differently, who talk differently, that I was never exposed to in my whole entire life for about 8 to 10 days down in Florida. And they all talked about, hey, if you want to be really effective and really fulfilled, this is non-negotiable. You have to start reading books like this, this, and this. And you couldn't catch me to save my life, be in a bookstore or read a book cover to cover ever up until that date. It was absolutely unbelievable. And that was a nudge that literally kind of kicked me in the neck and was like, hey, Scott, you know, there's some things you're not paying attention to that you should be.
So I'm sure there's a million books that you could tell us, but was there one or two that really caught you at the beginning of that journey that got you hooked?
Yeah, great question. And again, one of the biggest crimes in the world is trying to recommend books to people that you think would be appropriate for them, not knowing like anything they've read before. So I'm taking a really, really serious risk sharing these book titles, because again, it hits everyone at different times based on what they've read and all that fun stuff. So one that changed my life in 2003 was Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. Okay. Another one was The Power of Positive Thinking. And then another one was The Richest Man in Babylon. And again, everyone receives wisdom at different times and allows them to act at different times based on certain things. If you you recommend a book to someone, or hey, you need to go meet with this individual or do this, and it's the wrong time, they won't even see 1% of the value in it. And it'll brush across their face like it's not a big deal, and it may not ever come back ever again.
Yeah, it's a great point that we can all relate to, I'm sure. All right, so one of the things, speaking of reading lots of books, one of the things on your bio, on your website, which your bio, by the way, everyone should go visit scottsavore.com and read your bio, because it's very entertaining. You got all kinds of great fun facts on there.
Smoke and mirrors.
Well, one of the things is that you learned how to speed read. So did this happen right around the same time as you spending that week in Florida?
Yes. So I literally went to Borders Bookstore, thanks for listening. That evening I got back from my trip and I went and found these books and I was paging through them. I'm like, holy crap, like nobody talks like this. I can use this tomorrow in the trenches to solve problems. This is fun. This is exciting. And I literally read the three books that were recommended cover to cover by 3 a.m. the next day. It was crazy. But anyways, that created a fire inside of me. And it doesn't matter if it's me or anyone else, but you have to identify what sets your tail on fire, right? And then stay in that space. So it creates momentum. Momentum solves 90% of our problems, all that fun stuff. And like, don't stop. Like, don't let your family members, your friends, distractions take you off the path. Like, literally, you have to be so obsessed. And to your point, thanks for asking the question, be so obsessed with being the fastest learner you can be. I don't care what level you're at in coaching. I don't care how much success you've experienced or lack of success, or if you're spinning your wheels in between jobs right now, you have to be the fastest learner in the room. And even better, even more important, you have to know what are the disciplines and the non-negotiable ingredients that will allow you to be the fastest learner in any room. How do you decrease distractions? How do you create environments where you can learn faster, whether it's speed read or, absorb Reader's Digest versions of different books or content from different speakers and things, all that fun stuff.
So for you, it was speed reading. Is that something that you, I mean, was it a big undertaking to learn that skill? Or is it a pretty quick thing that you would recommend to others?
Yes. Anyone, please text me. I'll send you the exact videos I learned. Again, you're talking to a guy who had zero effectiveness academically and would read a page and forget it, reread it over again, forget it. I really believe I learned a very, very unique way that's fairly simple. And it was weird, Adam, because I kind of lost that skill. I feel like I exhausted it and almost maxed it out over a period of like 5-6 years. So I can't speed read. And like literally, it was like photographic memory on pages. It was absolutely crazy. And again, it helps when you're diving into things that you're really excited about. Right? That's the rub. That's the most important thing, is exposing yourself to things that you really care about and give a rat's tail about. But anyone, please text me 248-217-9725, and I'll send you all those videos that changed my life on how to speed read and absorb content faster.
Perfect. Beautiful. Thank you. Okay, let's go back to your journey. So you come back from Florida. You've read 3 books cover to cover in less than 24 hours. What happens next?
Yeah, so you kind of said it earlier. You get dissatisfied with your status quo. You start getting ticked off, and you're like, man, nobody's ever showed me these books. They have never exposed me to this information. I'm 23 years old. I'm so emotionally fulfilled by what I'm doing professionally. And it's like, holy crap, there's a whole nother world out there. So again, that's the tipping point to change. When you get ticked off enough with your status quo and like, I'm sick of this. I'm sick of fighting over the scraps in the coaching industry, in this job or this situation, or financially, I'm sick of struggling. And it's unfortunate that that's human nature. You need that kick in the butt to take you to a place you've never been before. And it could be because of desperation or determination.
So this is 2003, right? So at what point did you step away from your coaching career and get into your, well, I guess you're still coaching, but a different type of coaching. At what point did you step away from strength coaching?
Yeah, no, thank you for asking. So in 2003, right, I started getting my head spinning on, okay, what are some other realities of the world, personally and professionally, when I thought like everything, all my stars aligned for me. I was in my signature skill, my sweet spot, all that good stuff. So I got pulled down to another strength conditioning performance facility in Florida, which I was very fortunate for, literally working for the wealthiest person in Japan, which blew my mind being around Japanese business culture for 4 years. Adam, it was absolutely ridiculous. You talk about like just learning systems and trust and loyalty, unbelievable. And so then I had a cup of coffee there for 4 years, and then got to work for Pat Summitt at University of Tennessee for 2 years as another strength coach and get a master's degree, because thanks for listening. A lot of people said, hey, you're going to need a union card to get into places so you can teach what you know, and you'll need to get a master's degree. It will help you. So I was fortunate to work with Pat for 2 years, get a psychology degree there, a master's, and then took one more job before I worked back to Minnesota for family to ultimately start my own business, Secrets in Sports, and then to rebrand it over a year ago to Uncommon Competitor right now. So I've been fortunate literally the last 9-10 years to have my own business. Very fortunate.
Okay, great. And Uncommon Competitor is the name of your company. It's also the name of the book that you published last year in 2018. And so just to give our listeners a feel for what you're doing now, you are a keynote speaker, an author, but you do a lot of work in individual coaching, whether that's for executives, coaches, athletes. You do a lot of one-on-one, and you really do focus a lot on 30-day coaching contracts, correct?
Yes, sir. Very fortunate. Very, very fortunate. You have to work with a lot of individuals, teams, and companies.
And so what is, like, tell me a little bit about your philosophy and a little bit about the work that you do there. What is some of the first things that you focus on when you're working with a new client?
Oh, thanks so much for asking. So for anyone who's listening right now, if you're a coach at any level, this is really, really important. It has nothing to do with me. The approach, what I've learned inside the next thing I'm about to share has changed my life forever. And I wish I was exposed to it earlier. So again, I'm biased. We're all biased, right? People cannot rely, if you're a head coach, you're assistant coach at some place, you can't rely on your staff to grow you, make you uncomfortable at the level in which you probably need. And it could be where, whether it's your athletic director, your superintendent at your high school, whatever it is, they just don't have the time to max out and provide the growth experiences and developmental experiences that you need at the level that you're capable of to really, really scratch the surface of any of your ceiling personally or professionally. So I'm fortunate to do 30-day, very, very intense coaching contracts, consulting contracts with individuals, teams, and companies. It could be a player individually at the high school, college, or pro level. It could be a front office person. It could be a head coach, an assistant coach. It could be an agent of a player, a parent, a CEO of a company. I'm very fortunate. And they literally, they select a skill that they need to polish or varnish at a higher level and max out, or a situation they want to maximize. So, man, we got to get our culture right. Scott, give me everything you got on culture for the next 30 days. Send me all the content that I can literally handle, and then hold me accountable to the required disciplines that lead to habits weekly that will ultimately solve a lot of these problems so we can be more effective and more fulfilled than my exact scenario. So that's so fun. Every scenario is so different, but very fortunate to be a part of it.
So the first step really, and it's so funny because this is the conversation that we had last week with Alicia Jessup of The Athletic, you know, and she was talking about personal branding, but a little bit of the similar messaging in that the first step to any of this is self-discovery and self-awareness. Is that fair to say?
100%, yeah, because you can't act. I can't act on anything at a level that I'm supposed to unless my radar is up at a high level of awareness. Yes, sir.
So what do you have any techniques or because it's hard when you're in the middle of it or in the trenches and you've got your head down, you know, and you're focused on, you got your blinders on and focused on your season or your work or whatever. It's hard to really take a step back and realize what it is that you need to improve, what it is you need to work on. Do you have any techniques or tips for ways to do that?
Yeah, great question. So again, never believe what I say ever, right? This is just feedback and stuff I've learned from the amazing people I've been around in my life and the things that I've studied. So it's what I know up until obviously this exact moment. But I do know this. You've got to create habits inside of values, and it starts personally. And to answer your question, please, specifically, if you don't start there, you're literally trying to boil the ocean. You're literally trying to throw a penny in the ocean and say, oh, you just got to focus more. You just got to pay attention to this. You got to keep your radar up. And no, like you got to drill down into habits that allows you to demonstrate a high level of awareness. And then you need to get around people and or take the lead in rewarding those daily habits inside of the awareness and all the other things that are important that pull you in the direction you need to be. And that, again, it's not sexy. They don't teach us in any class in America, and you get lucky if you stumble upon anything close to what we're talking about right now the rest of your life. And the reality is, unfortunately, most people will not experience a level of awareness to even scratch the surface of their potential. It makes me want to puke and throw up in my own mouth. It doesn't even make any sense, but it's literally embarrassing.
So step one, figure out what's important to you, figure out your values. And then from there, start building habits that hold yourself accountable to those values. Did I say that somewhat accurately?
Yes. Yes, sir. And that'll directly drill down into your awareness at a level that you can't even comprehend in a great way.
Can you give me, I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing your values, but can you give me some examples of like some values and some habits and how that works together?
100%. Easiest thing in the history of the world. This has to be something that I have to make public every day. If I don't, like, I think it's just bunny foo-foo stuff, and there's no value in it, right? So you have to be able to have conversations every single day with people about your values, the things that of which you will not compromise. Not perfect, because there's no such thing, right? But you have to be able to make them public so you can literally prioritize and progress in those. So, like, one for me would be joy. And here's what's crazy. Like, joy has no value unless you drill down what are the prerequisites that increase joy in your family members, in your coworkers, in your players, right? And the number one thing, and people don't talk about this enough, and that's why most people are miserable and depression is off the grid right now at all ages. It's absolutely insane because people are fixing the wrong things and they're attacking the wrong things. The number one precursor that elevates joy is gratitude. And the best thing about gratitude, Adam, and coaches, you better pay attention, please. You better be writing this down, please. The best thing about gratitude is it messes with your awareness. If you have a high level of gratitude on a daily basis, and you demonstrate that with your staff and your players, their awareness goes through the roof because you have to find reasons to appreciate the good, the bad, and everything in between. And it forces you to keep your radar up if you celebrate, and there's a lot of fun things you can do on and off the court. It's unbelievable.
So joy would be your value. Gratitude is something that you have to, it has to become a habit for you. And that's something that you can track and measure and hold yourself to every day. Am I grateful for the experiences, the people that I'm around and touching every day?
Yep. If you're not writing it respectfully, Adam, if you're not writing in a gratitude journal every morning or at least every night or at least a handful of times throughout the week, your joy is so limited. It's unbelievable. And that, like, literally, I am grateful for when you wake up tomorrow morning. I am grateful for. Write down three things really simple. Put it on paper. It changes everything.
Yeah, I love that. So you do that twice a day, or you do that in the mornings? Or
I go in the morning. The morning works really well for me that I've found so far. Yep.
Love it. What are some other things that you've noticed, because you have worked with a lot of coaches, what are some other things that you've noticed in the coaching profession that people are missing the boat on or need to refocus their lens on?
Great question. Could I share, do we have enough time to share, maybe in a Reader's Digest version, seven things that I've identified that I think are game changers for coaches that they have to make sure they prioritize these things?
Please.
Okay, awesome. Here we go. Buckle up. I'm going to go over these quick, but I really believe in these. And again, I'm very spoiled, Adam. I get to go to 80 to 100 practices and or games a year at all levels all over the country and meet with thousands of coaches, parents, administrators, front office people, athletes. Again, I've been very, very spoiled. That's nothing to do with me, but I'm just sharing context, right? So this is where this is coming from. So I hinted on the first value that I really believe in is demonstrating joy, right? And that comes from gratitude. You have to be able to walk into a practice right now in 2019, and you should be able to hear coaches saying please and thank you, because that's the number one thing that's going to influence the awareness of your team. And the greater your awareness, the greater your power. This is not up for negotiation. There are no exceptions to the rule in any high school or college or professional team or grassroots situation in the history of the world. Okay, so that's first and foremost, because everyone's pursuing happiness, and that's a major mistake. Because happiness is dependent upon what's going on outside of you. And that's a lie, right? That's something you don't want any part of. You want to be able to demonstrate joy through your gratitude first and learn to love everything you do. That's first and foremost. So finding the realities of what that really is. Joy, not pursuing happiness. You don't need basketball to make you happy. You don't need scoring baskets to make you happy. That's all a lie. It's an illusion. And it actually impedes your progress from maxing all your skills and abilities as a coach and player. Make sense?
Yeah, I'm with you.
Okay, second thing, please, real relationships. And I would call this merciless friendships. Not, hey, Adam's my good friend. Oh, he works for Rising Coaches. He can network me with other people. You can level me up in the industry, blah, say, blah, blah, blah. All that stuff's trash. I'm talking about, hey, Adam, hold me accountable to this. I want a real, authentic, genuine, organic relationship with accountability, with standards, with trade-off value. And if you graduate, I might not stay in touch with you, or vice versa. If you get too big time and you don't consistently communicate back with me, for example, I was just communicating with Ryan Saunders this morning, head coach for the Minnesota Timberwolves. It doesn't matter. I'm just sharing context. And I said, Ryan, I texted back. I said, thank you so much for being a consistent communicator inside of real relationships, because consistency creates credibility, right? When you'd have every excuse in the history of the world not to respond and communicate consistently because you're so busy, you're head coach in the NBA, and you can make up every excuse in the history of the world. No, thank you. Hold each other accountable. I don't care if you're in season, off season. Communicate to people if they reach out to you. Give them the respect as a human being, and maybe you send them two sentences back. It's all good. But return that communication back to them and demonstrate real relationships, merciless friendships. That's two. So Sound good? Any thoughts so far, please, sir?
Oh, I love it. And basic stuff. Like, this isn't, it's not groundbreaking new philosophies, but it's really, really important. Basic humanity, human needs, you know, stuff that you learn in kindergarten, which is often like the most, you know, potent stuff that you learn your whole life.
Yeah, great point. And then all I would share is this, please, Adam. And for anyone who's listening, on the surface, it seems simple, but it can be really, there's some really, really fun strategies that you can demonstrate on the court, off the court, as a coach, as a player, that would blow your mind, that doesn't involve popcorn, peanuts, riding into practice on a donkey. Like, you don't need all these props and things and all this magical stuff, but there's some really, really fun solution-based things that would excite the heck out of you, I promise you, that would drill down into those simple things like you said.
Yeah, and it's simple, but we're all guilty of not living up to these things. I mean, as you were talking about it, I was like, is he talking to me? Because I know I've been guilty of not communicating to people. So it's stuff, yeah, you get caught up in your everyday, you know, BS, the stuff that doesn't matter, but you think is the most important stuff to you at the time. And you forget the basics. But anyways, please continue. We're on two. Give us three.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for listening. Here we go. Positive peer pressure is a big deal, right? So there's enough negativity that we'll all manufacture enough in our own mind. You have to be willing to go out to the world in the most negative scenarios known to man and woman, just when there's no human way you can find something positive, and literally invent it or create it and have a blast doing it. Belichick's really big on with the Patriots ignoring the noise, right? We always talk to players and coaches. If you don't ignore the noise at a high level and find ways to create positive peer pressure in a powerful, pleasurable way, you will become the noise, right? And again, more than any time in the history of the world, people are avoiding negativity as much as possible. So as a coach, as a leader, you just have to be allergic to those type of situations and have a lot of fun repackaging things in a positive way. Number five, please. Maximizing motivation. Coaches who have financial problems, who have personal problems, usually have motivational problems. Players who have performance problems usually have motivational problems. Motivation right now, Adam, has become so watered down that people literally ignore the word when you say it. Oh, she's a motivational speaker. Oh, he's too rah-rah. She's too rah-rah. People are changing the definition of words when they have no business messing with the definition of words that are extremely needed. And one of the extremely necessary words right now is motivation. Players can be motivated by desperation or determination, and you have to know how you can leverage both.
Love it.
So many things.
You're on a roll,
keep
Scott.
Going,
keep rolling.
Doing
yeah, you're doing great.
Next one, please. A balanced approach. We all struggle with this. Somebody has to lead in this category. Right, you can't just keep saying, oh, we're busy, oh, we're going to grind our players to a fine powder 6-7 days a week, worked out. No player ever goes up to their head coach and says, hey, can we practice longer today, coach? Because they're already grinded to Cheeto dust, right? And the coaches are, and their families are, and we have to lead and brag about being balanced. Okay? And the most effective coaches who sustain success in the history of the world brag about being balanced. They're like, hey, we're going to have a practice alternative today. We're going to protect your mind and your body. And guess what? I'm going to protect myself at a higher level, because I know at the end of the day, when we need you most, at the middle of the season, the end of the season, you'll be at your best. Okay, so I'm going to keep my radar up to a balanced approach.
It's Scott,
another thing I really believe in, that's something coaches, yeah.
I want to ask you about this one, because I'm a big believer in this, and I try to preach this to everybody I talk to in the coaching profession, because I think there's a serious, serious problem in the coaching profession with lack of balance and insane hours that you have to put in. How do you manage this when you are not the head coach, when you are an assistant or you're a GA, you're somewhere not at the top of the totem pole, somewhere towards the bottom, and you don't have the ability to make the team's schedule?
Yes, great question. Any assistant coaches out there, please listen to this. If you can demonstrate that of which you believe, so a balanced approach, practice less, do more with less, all those fun things, right? And you don't have the keys to the kingdom. You don't have the controller with your team. You're not head coach yet, right? Or maybe you're strapped as a head coach and the AD won't let you do certain things, or there's these invisible walls that are put up, like, oh, if I don't stay in the office for 17 and a half hours every single day, they won't think I'm committed.
That's a lie. Right, right.
Fear is driving your behavior. You don't know what the hell you're doing, respectfully. Once you identify what the truth is, that of which you believe to the best of your ability, like, hey, we want during the month of July in the offseason, we want no coaches in the office because we know it's a grind once we flip the switch again when season comes around, right? In order to protect the livelihood and effectiveness of my coaches, I know that's the most important thing to do. I don't care what anyone else says. And that's why people like Steve Kerr, Cheryl Reeve have been fortunate to be around the last 4.5 years. They don't care what other people are doing because they've studied the truth enough and they know what they believe in is right. It's not perfect, but they believe it's really, really effective, and they don't care what the media says. They don't care what people say. And that's a level of confidence that's so mission critical that you have to study and train for on a daily basis in order to demonstrate that at a high level, whether you're assistant or head coach, doesn't matter.
Scott, I was going to ask you this later, but I'm going to ask it now. You've been around so many great coaches, athletes, leaders. What is the trait that they have in common, if you can pick one or two? And I feel like it's just what we were talking about, but I'm going to let you answer it.
Yeah, so I would probably pull two answers from a great movie called In Search of Greatness. If you're a coach and you have not seen this movie, shame on you. It's crazy. So probably the most effective independent film ever created on performance, called In Search of Greatness. And they literally identified two traits that make people really, really effective. One is they're really fast learner, right? They're really fast learner, and they make that a priority. Okay. And study anyone, Warren Buffett, anyone. It's the same thing. Like, if you, again, most basketball coaches get under their little bubble wrapped bubble and they only study basketball, and guess what? They'll get destroyed. Sooner or later, you'll get destroyed because you're going to destroy your family. You're going to destroy yourself because basketball is going to end someday. And guess what? Tomorrow, you're going to need to have skills outside of basketball. And most people who are in the bubble don't help you with those and will never help train you in those. So it's just like, oh, get lucky if you can. So In Search of Greatness, you have to be a fast learner. So Cheryl Reeve, Steve Kerr, all the most effective coaches that have been around, they're always fast learners. Cheryl Reeve always says this. Thanks for listening, Adam. She always says, what do you think? What do you think? And then she told me one time, I never want to say no to information ever. Okay. They're always asking questions, right? All that fun stuff. It doesn't matter who they're with, whether someone who is not even basketball affiliated comes in and watch a practice, whatever it is. Okay. And the second thing is they have a rage to master. They flirt with being so obsessed with what they do that it becomes almost unhealthy. I'll never forget. Thanks for listening. Coaches, please listen to this. Meeting with Flip Saunders before he died, and I asked Flip Saunders, respectfully, it doesn't matter if it's me, but I was very fortunate to be there and learn, what's the best thing that can happen in your life right now? And he told me, Scott, my greatest strength is my greatest weakness. I love what I do so much, I can't turn it off. I need a more healthy balance. And we need to take the lead in that category, coaches. And at the end of the day, you'll win more games, and your players will be more effective, and you'll be more effective. But you can't let fear suck the life out of you and prevent you from making the decisions that are most important inside a balanced approach.
Love it. Thanks for sharing that. All right, I think we have one more, right? Problem in the coaching industry. Are we
awesome.
On seven?
Two left, please. Yep, two left. Awesome. Thanks for your patience. So another one, I kind of messed with it a little bit a minute ago. Being able to demonstrate contagious confidence. People are so afraid, Adam, right now. Coaches are so afraid of what other people think about, oh, if I don't win so many games, if I don't do this, I'm not going to have a job next year, right? Your players will feel that. Your staff will feel that. Confidence is developed through preparation, but very, very unique preparation that usually isn't taught. Okay, and if you met with, I remember meeting with Kobe Bryant on this and other stuff. It's the same thing across the board. Very, very unique preparation. Again, that comes down to your habits, your values, the things that you celebrate that you will not compromise. And the last thing, thanks for listening, that I've identified in coaching, and I believe hopefully I demonstrate this and I make it a priority from a value perspective, is one-day contracts. Literally, to not be satisfied, the good I will do today will do me no good tomorrow. Coaches, I don't care if you're undefeated for 13 years. I don't care how much money you make, how many plays, how long you've been at a certain level. None of it matters. We all have one-day contracts. We're one step away from the streets. And that mentality, not in a suffocating way, not like you wake up tomorrow and, oh, I got to breathe through a snorkel and I can't never be satisfied ever, 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 ever. No, it should free you up in a way where like, hey, you know, we're really crushing it right now. We're batting 1,000. Things are going well. But let's test our assumptions. Let's keep our radar up to one-day contracts. The good I will do today will not do me any good tomorrow. And let's stay humble, but let's also stay hungry. Thanks for listening.
Wow. So much good stuff. I'm definitely going to, as soon as we're done, I'm going to go back, listen to our conversation and take some notes and write all this down because no, you spew wisdom at a fast pace. So you really got to have your pen ready when you talk to you or when you're listening to you. All right. Tell us about the book. What can we expect in the book, Uncommon Competitor?
Thanks so much for asking. Again, I didn't expect you to bring it up. Again, this is really weird. I wrote the book for me, and the book is not meant to be read. It is meant to be lived. And that's why the book literally is not for most people. It's not for most coaches because it requires you to partner up with another person on a daily basis and be held accountable to your actions. Wow, imagine that. For real? You can't just go to Starbucks or sit in your office and page through this book and be safe and, again, put on your electric blanket and put your feet up and be like, oh, I'm just going to absorb some content and think that that's action. Heck no. Heck no. Life rewards action. So, again, it's called Uncommon Competitor, One Day Contracts. It's on Amazon, whatever, whatever. It's not for everyone. It's not. So, thanks for listening. I feel really bad. I got an exit stage left here to my next responsibility. So honored to be a part of this. Always let me know what I could do better, please, sir. Anything else on your end, please?
Scott, that was fantastic. If people want to follow along with what you're doing other than reading the book, where can they find you? Social media, website, anything like that?
Oh, thank you so much for asking. My website is not smokeandmirrors.com. It is scottsavore.com. I always give people like, hey, just keep your radar up. Don't believe anything anyone says. Help them manufacture your curiosity and your passion for learning. So that's why I always joke and say smoke and mirrors. But scottsavore.com, and then, you know, I'm on Twitter, Scott Savore, all that fun stuff. And then LinkedIn's been a game changer for me. It's been really fun dialoguing with people and learning and sharing stuff on LinkedIn too. But please text me. I want real relationships with people. If any of this connected in any way whatsoever with anyone listening, text me 248-217-9725. Love to have a conversation. If I list it off, thanks for listening. All the amazing people who have helped me in my life, we'd be dead before I'd get halfway through that list. It's so long. And I've been very, very spoiled and fortunate.
Scott, we've been very fortunate to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much, man.
I appreciate you, sir. Thanks so much. Talk soon.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Crushing it.